Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texas Coin. Right now, that Texas coin is sitting right at $3.16, and that's right now on September 10th, 2025. They're hashing right there in the great state of Texas, right out about 400 gigahertz. And I tell you, right now, they have already signed up 23,793 miners. And you'll recall, I signed up about a month ago. There was only 12,000, so it's practically doubled. They're signing up about 350 a day to mine that Texas coin. Hey, if you want to get in on this and learn more about it, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com. That's TEXITMINES@gmail.com. And go ahead and shoot that. Put the word palm in there somewhere, like in the subject line, P-A-L-M, like a palm tree, to get that discount. And we hope you enjoy today's show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the Mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks. Hey, welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are glad to be with you folks today. And as usual, I'm right here beside my good brother, the incomparable Professor Barlow. How you doing
today?
Got
my three-eyed Atlas cup today. I'm ready for Halloween, y'all.
Three-eyed Atlas. There you go. Look at that. Three-eyed Atlas. Look at that bad boy. Old three-eyed, when it pops around the sun, we'll be ready for him. But hey, Dr. Barlow, we have got an incredible guest today.
Oh, I couldn't sleep last night thinking about this guest we have today, Steve.
I'm telling you, I am fired up. We have got a true champion for Florida's natural resources.
A man of nature, a man of the coastline.
I'm telling you.
Right.
Today we have Sir J. Kelly. He's a graduate of Michigan State University. He's got degrees in wildlife science and political theory. Now, Sir J., he's made a move to the Sunshine State, and he has stormed onto the conservation scene like a force of nature, I'm telling you. So he's living here in Florida. He's dedicated his passions to fighting for our state's precious wildlife habitat, natural areas, he dives into the depths. I mean, if you watch this boy on Instagram, action. He dives in the depths. He's out running, just like you and I, Douglas, out going for a jog in nature.
Fortune favors the bold.
That's right. And he is a fearless advocate for a freer, more protected Florida. And those are kind of opposed, diametrically opposed, but he's threading a needle and making it work. Mm-hmm. He's also the founder of Florida Keepers. Now, this is a bold, what I would say, and this is the most important word, nonpartisan organization is committed to safeguarding wild Florida, its real residents, from endless development. And Sir J.'s leading that charge to keep wild Florida thriving for generations to come. Hey, Sir J., it's an honor. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's great to be here. It's great to be here. You guys are too kind, making it sound too kind. But I love just being out in Florida, growing up outdoors all the time. Obviously, yes, came from Michigan. Always in Florida, though. Since a kid, we did trips down here. We spent winters down here. And, you know, obviously, I think we can all rally behind what's going on in Florida. And it's not a pretty picture. So we got to change that. So especially for the long term.
Yeah. Well, hey, we appreciate the work you're doing. And what kind of first got you to Florida? You know, we talked about Michigan State. Did you come down as you were growing up, or how did you first get exposed to Florida?
Yeah. So the first time, I think I was probably 6 or 7. So I lived in Michigan mostly, but we would do, you know, winters. It was kind of like a snowbird type situation, which I know not everyone's fond of, but I mean, I can't choose where I was born or where I lived, but at that time. Always, you know, super young. You know, we did Disney, but I honestly just liked when we were at the beach, any wild area, you know, going out to the Everglades, going out to any wild part I could find during the family vacation, I was there. So, did that all the way through. And then in college, actually, I wasn't too happy with what my university, what the state of Michigan was doing with that one whole event in 2020. So moved pretty much spent a lot of time down here because the classes were online. So I was like, I'm getting out of there. I'm not, you know, wearing a mask outside or being told I need to wear a mask outside on campus, you know. So I came down here a bunch and then changed my residency during that time. And kind of wish I did college down here, actually, but got down here as soon as I could. And yep, did the political theory and the fisheries and wildlife. And that's what's kind of led me to here, you know, being involved in conservation and seeing what political tools we can use. Because you guys know, I mean, there's plenty of ways to do petitioning, canvassing, telling your politicians, you know, harassing them essentially, politely. But that's not really working long term. So we need new politicians that stand for Florida. So I think getting a bit more of the conservation side into politics, you know, would really, really help.
That's great. That's great. Well, hey, Sergey, I want to tell you something just as we're getting rolling here. You know, Douglas and I did a little bit of research, as we always do prior to the podcast. And we found an interview with you with one of those institutions of higher learning, right? And the interviewer that was talking to you, she was like, oh my goodness, you go out at nighttime and you must run into wild hogs. Oh my, whatever do you do? That was one of the questions. And even snakes at night. Rest assured, the typical subscriber to the Palm and Pine podcast knows what to do if they run across a pig, right? So,
there we go.
but given that, hey, I want to start off with kind of a long question, okay? And this is going to get, we're going to go down a rabbit hole right away. But I think this is going to kind of open it up for the whole next 20 minutes. I mean, what I'm going to ask you. So bear with me as I try, and forgive me as I try to waddle through this question. I mean, you've already talked about what happened in 2020. And I'm telling you, we're counting on your generation. That happened to you at a pivotal time in your life. And our prayers are with you and your generation that woke you up in a unique way. What I wanna get into is you're constantly out there, you're doing the good word. And I first saw you on Instagram, and folks, we'll share this Instagram. You need to go check this out. But it seems like every time I pulled up Instagram, you're out there fighting the fight. You're active. You're out in the outdoors. You're bringing things to the table of what's happening in Florida. But there was one particular Instagram story that I came across that really spoke to me. And I think you were out for a run, and you were holding the camera, your phone, and you mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm going to get this wrong, so just bear with me, but basically you mentioned something to the effect of like, you know, that maybe you own a gun or maybe you do something else horrible like eat meat, and instantly, you had picked up a lot of complaints and maybe lost some followers because they said you were far right, that you were conservative. Mm. And so you shared that in this story, and you talked about how other times you talk about championing for the environment, for wildlife, for habitats, and then people on the right or the conservatives automatically label you as a liberal bunny hugger. Yeah. And they don't want to talk to you. And then you lose those followers. Yeah. And, you know, I've spent my career as a wildlife biologist, and I personally had to straddle that line all the time. And I was always labeled, you know, a knuckle-dragging redneck if someone knew I hunted, or even if they just heard me talk, right? They just be like, well, yeah, you know, whatever. And so they had these biases they brought to the table. But it's gotten more extreme. And you went on to say, we've got to find a way to work together because we all appreciate wildlife. We all appreciate habitat. We all appreciate Florida. Can we dig into that a little bit, Sergey? Can you talk about that and maybe tell me some strategies and some ways you're bridging that divide?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. One is, for better or for worse, usually the topic of environmentalism or even conservation from a like save the wildlife type of perspective is often painted as like, okay, that's left of center. which I think, yes, there might be more vocal people online that might lean that way, that do talk about environmentalism, or at least that's what the perception is. I don't think it's not necessarily bad, but it's not necessarily good, because we don't want it to be painted, oh, unless you're this political view, then you can't be in the conversation of save the American crocodile or help save the coral reefs. It's, you know, there's no politics to that. Two, I think, is the fact of, actually two more. Two is the fact of, I like to, there's a couple of videos I try to put out, but put in the perspective, like, let's say you save a turtle that's crossing a road, or you've gone down with moat and cleaned the corals or whatever it is. The coral reef or the polyps in the coral or the turtle isn't asking your politics. You know, they're just thankful that somebody, whoever it was, helped them either get saved, help clean them, help move them. For our case, it's a lot of land preservation. So the thing we're even trying to save doesn't give a crap about what our views are. It's just, you know, we're trying to save it for the sake of saving it. So for the next generation, for natural resources, for enjoying it. And the third part, kind of the three points I like to look at is, like, as you pointed out, we all want, you know, the hunter, bear hunter even, which people might not even, they might not agree with bear hunting. I think it's, you know, if you have a sustainable population, yes. And all that. Bear hunter, fisherman, hiker, even tree hugger, or you like taking water samples, whatever it is, you need that land, you need that water, you need that resource to be good. You know, so we can't look at, oh, well, they want to go and, you know, shoot this animal, blah, 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 even though that's one thing I kind of get annoyed about. I mean, we've been doing that since man has been able to hold a spear, we've been hunting. I mean, before that, we were throwing rocks at animals. So, like, we've been doing that for a long time. And nowadays, I mean, it's way more humane to shoot an animal than throw a spear at it. That's for sure. But anyhow, everyone needs that resource. And, like, I personally, like, I have friends that, you know, will fish for sharks from the shore, which is a pretty big, and many people just don't like it at all. I can see the reasons for complications in it for sure. And I talked to them about how they're trying to, you know, improve that practice. But I have friends who do that. I have friends who are divers, friends who are hunters. And when Florida Keepers, in our perspective, is like, we don't care who it is who walks through the door, as long as your agreement is we all have to save this for the sake of whatever our passion is, we need it to be vibrant and alive and for the sake of its own preservation. That's a harder topic to bring across, is like, can we just save it for the sake of itself outside of our use of it, even though you're going to need both to kind of win that side. But I think that's been a big, big impediment. And I talk to Florida Keepers a lot about this, the rest of the board, and people that are, I think, palpable with the topic, is that when people are seeing the conservation scene in Florida and they're seeing all this stuff that you guys talk about, you know, Matt the Welder, or, you know, Beyond Florida talks about all this stuff, I think if we come off and it looks like, oh, well, you have to be a certain partisan stance. Let's say it was the other way around. Let's say it looked like everyone in this scene was, you know, super redneck, super right leaning, and we'd be turning away a huge crowd that would also want to be on our side. So I think we can't have that view where it looks like, oh, you have to be this sort of way to even get in the conversation. And I'll wrap up. But that's one of the big critiques I had with some of the environmentalism in Florida, is they like to prioritize in their environmental work what they would call, you know, intersectionality type stuff. And that's not bad. I think that's great if you want to do it on a personal or private level. But it's like, if someone's looking at a group like, oh, they're trying to, you know, fight off alligator, Alcatraz or whatever, but then they go on this whole thing about you're awful if you're a Trump supporter, it could be because you helped support this. So that's where it's like, we really have to understand, one, save it for the sake of saving it. We all need to be on the same page. The wildlife or land doesn't carry a view, and we can't have a bias that comes off to people that are trying to get in this fight, because it has to be as open as possible.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Now, from what I understand, watching a few things about you, you're especially interested in the mangrove habitat on the Gulf Coast. So you probably don't go up into the panhandle a lot, you know. Tell us what it is about that habitat that so fascinates you.
Yeah, I don't even know how to put a like explanation on it. I just like being the Keys or being, you know, Port Charlotte, those mangroves, even Tampa. I don't know. It's just something to me, it looks like the most different ecosystem you can get in the United States. at least for, you know, wetland variety. Obviously, the desert's way different. But in terms of wetlands, you know, it just, I don't know, it just stands out. Also, for me, it's that confluence of you can get, well, for one, gators and crocodiles in the same area, which I just like that idea. Seeing, you know, sharks come into the shallows, really, really cool. Especially these animals are, you know, seeing a large bull shark come into the shallow mangroves just doesn't seem to fit. Or you see the mantis chasing mullet or whatnot into the mangroves. I think maybe that's probably one of the places I definitely visited the most growing up. So that might be part of the, you know, the hit there. And yeah, it definitely has something to do with the Keys too. That's hands down my favorite part of Florida, probably the world, but there's some spots, I won't say the exact Keys because we can't have them overrun, but in the lower Keys, there's some still remote trails back there. I can go back there for hours and hours and not see anybody. And it's just maybe a rare sighting of flamingo. That's a whole different conversation, but it's just so empty out there. But there's empty in terms of houses and people, but you look below the surface, you've got just, you know, just below the water, it's just teeming with life. So to me, it's just something stands apart about that. And just seeing that the flats there are amazing, just how vast it is. And it's also one of the most tricky ecosystems in the world. We have, you know, red tide, you know, we have the Lake Okeechobee discharges. We've got the fish spinning disease that hit the Keys, hit it twice, but they didn't really talk about it too much the second time. So it's like one of those very delicate ecosystems that I think if we don't help keep saving is really gonna really bring a detriment to the whole thing. And honestly, I know a lot of people like go out in the mangroves and whatnot, but most people don't. Like, I know many people will like wade in the mangroves or go like, you know, neck deep swimming around, whatever, you know, you've got stingrays and everything. But most people, I would say, haven't really seen, you know, the mangroves. They haven't really gone out there, gone out in the flies and the mosquitoes and really seen what happens at night. I mean, I run there at night. It's pitch black. I'm crossing, you know, some creeks and canals and nobody's out there, but it's a whole different world. You know, all the reefs come to life. It's just, it's its own thing. It's own world down there.
Well, what is the most dangerous thing you've encountered during your time in the mangroves?
Not counting people.
Yeah. Most dangerous thing. I would just say, I mean, the most, I have two. One is like what the most tricky animal situation I've gotten into was just a big southern ray. I was over by Port Charlotte, that area, looking for sawfish. And so I'm trying to get good film of them underwater and preferably in the water with the animal, which that might be a liability. But it was a cloudy. The problem is it got really cloudy. So you need the sun to help see through the, you know, brownish water of the mangroves. And so obviously a southern stingray looks exactly like the bottom. And I'm just going through. And then like in the last second, I just see like its wing flip up and a little flash of white. And I knew what it was because registered it, you know, seen so many of them. And I just it was right in front of me though. So it was either, you know, I don't want to disturb it. Obviously, if it can't see, I can't see it. That's a problem. But in the last second, had my Insta360 camera already underwater. So just kind of put it between me and the animal, just slowly backed away. But then it instantly turned around and like went towards me. So I had to kind of like run out of there. But that's probably the closest where it's like a bad animal encounter. Again, like Steve Irwin said, we can't blame the animal. The one that actually had a problem in the mangroves, it wasn't an animal. I sculpted my knee running. This was about a year ago. It was last Easter. Running in the South Glades. I finished a long week of running, was a bit tired, new route. And just a weird gravel path, tripped on it, scalped my knee against the root system, and then 17 stitches around the patella there. And yeah, that's the like actual worst encounter I've had in the mangroves. It wasn't an animal though. I tell people all the time, I wish I'd fallen in the water and a croc had bitten me somewhere. At least have a better story.
Well, I tell you, it's, sometimes.
You could have made it into a better story.
Yeah. That's true.
Sometimes we're our own worst enemies, and we can make our own calamities for sure. You know, we're up in Levy County. We're near Cedar Key, which is, you know, kind of the farthest north point of all three mangrove species. So that's kind of unique up here where we're at, not too far north of you. Hey, let's shift gears a little bit. Tell us a little bit about some of the some of the battles, if you will, and maybe that's not the right way to say it, but some of the things you're working on right now and some of the challenges that everybody should know. This will be on the airwaves in about a week. So okay. What are some things happening right now that people should know about and get involved with that you're fighting with?
Yeah, so I'd say the first topic of big developments to know about, ones that are currently being either in plans or things that we want to help mitigate the size that their adventure would be, Kingston and Bunnell, and then there's a new one up in Flagler. Those three are built in very critical areas. The ones up in Flagler and Bunnell are kind of the last remaining wild areas that are open to the corridor. The Bunnell one is actually, and it's the Haw Reserve, that's the name of it. That one is in the land that the Wildlife Corridor wants to acquire. And it's a critical path to connect with the Atlantic side, also connect to that, you know, inner corridor between Kissimmee, Orlando, that whole area. So that's a bad one. And they've pushed that through. There was the mayor flip-flop. There was a bunch of stuff behind the scenes, I would speculate. That's a good one to have on the top of your radar. The Kingston development. This is a big one right over, pretty much just north of the Pecan Strand Forest.
Now, for our viewers, can we clarify what you mean by development?
Yes. So talking about wild land development. So this isn't the upgrading or improvement of an inner city or a spawn Palm Beach Island. This is raw wild land that has, you know, teeming with herons, gators, panthers, whatever it is. It's raw land that they now want to build massive suburbs on. Because that's a good point. Yeah, development isn't always bad. Development in the case of like if you're downtown Orlando and they're revitalizing something or whatever it is, okay. I mean, it probably could be good in a lot of cases. There was a case in Gainesville. I have to pull its name up, but it would come up if you typed in Gainesville. What was the name? But they built a huge apartment complex, but on top of old abandoned buildings. You know, they're tearing it down, and so that's a good development. But this is raw wild land development. Kingston is over by Fort Myers area, and it's essentially going to just decimate tons of panther habitat. And the one thing that I really don't like about that one is on their website, if you type in Kingston, they call a conservation restoration project on the homepage of the website. And they say it's really laughable. It literally, and it says like a conservation restoration project with a component of development. So they make it sound like, you know, they're saving, you know, huge swaths of land. They're helping the panther and they're just going to add like a couple houses in the corner and it's going to be all nice and dandy. So that one, when they lie like that, we really try, you know, put some civic shame behind them. It's gotta be civil. It's gotta be within the law. The big one that's really, if you've not seen yet, is the stuff about the fish and wildlife and their special activity licensing. So, and this is the manta ray stuff and that petition that's been going around. So essentially there's a group of us, some have been involved, other people have been involved a bit more than I have, but they kind of briefed me about it and we did some more research. But essentially what has been found is since 2018, over about 250 endangered species, endangered and threatened and critically endangered species have been permitted for take out of Florida waters and then sent for exhibition in aquariums. That's a big one because it's one that even like conservationists who have been in this whole thing for decades, they didn't even know about this whole process. It's something that really wasn't too much was known about. And we're trying to fight that because in November is a meeting where they're going to review that whole process, how they send those permits out. We were able to push them to temporarily ban five of those permits for animals for capture. Just a couple of weeks ago, they announced that the Fish and Wildlife Commission came out. So that's good because there's a group of legislators, there's a group of, I guess you want to say advocates or whatever you want to paint it. That's a big one we're trying to push. I'd say also some big ones to keep on the radar, definitely alligator Alcatraz and the rock mine. Those are big threats because the Everglades is something that, you know, yes, they're doing a lot of restoration projects. Like yesterday, I just reported that they just started the Blue Shanty project, which essentially helping the flow from the North Glades to the south on the Tamiami Trail there on the east side. But Alligator Alcatraz, though it's much smaller in size than what the rock mines would be, it's the light pollution, it's the traffic, it's the idea that we shouldn't have any large-scale facility like that, whether it's immigration-related, whether it's a big school, whether it's a huge concert they host or a concert venue they host for weeks and weeks on end. It has to be, you know, quiet and wild and free out there. The rock mine, this one, I would say, if you want, obviously, Floyd Keepers does have a lot of information on this, but we've actually been learning and working a lot with Captains for Clean Water. So they would be a good resource on that. And that's a 9,000-acre mining project proposed in the, it's right north of the Rottenberger Wildlife Management Area. This is right south of Lake Okeechobee. And that one is essentially, if it's given all the green lights and permission, that's 30 to 40 years of that land being aggregated, mined out, big holes would be left of probably contaminants, mixed up stuff, you know, ruined land. And then they would be sent to the state of Florida for management by our taxpayer dollars. And it's much, much harder to store mined fields and whatnot than what we have there is sugarcane, which is already bad enough. So that's something we're trying to keep a top of, because there's a lot of ideas about, I mean, it's backed by U.S. Sugar and Florida Crystals. And the real blame, though, is the politicians, because they allowed this to happen. So that's one we're trying to step in on top of as well.
All right. All right. Well, a lot of stuff there going on. Appreciate that update. And, you know, when you say politicians, you're just really saying organized crime, right?
Legalized crime. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Organized crime. I mean, that Alligator Alcatraz, that's, you know, $180 million down into the hole, you know, I mean, that's what all that stuff is. It's really about the dollars at the end of the day, of course. But hey, as we close up, Sergey, just tell us a little bit about your organization, Florida Keepers. How many members, you know, kind of the scope of that, and how do we join? How do we help out? How do we get involved?
How do we find you?
And how do we find you? All of that, if you would, in the next 10 minutes.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. So Florida Keepers, again, nonpartisan. We're here to political organization here to elect new candidates that will stand for Florida and Wild Florida. The board, there's five of us, and then we have district leaders. There's another six of those. So about 10 or 11 in total on leadership. And then members, about active members, we have a good 32, 33. And then our weekly meetings, which anyone is welcome to join. And though that Zoom link is always posted on our socials, in our affiliated chats, whatnot. That's Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. We usually have about 25 to 30 people there. And then we also have district meetings each week. And those you get into once you've been to a general meeting. It's kind of where we, you know, if you're in the north part of Florida, if you're in the south part of Florida, if you're in the panhandle, we have a different, you know, meeting for you to go to, because obviously your concerns are going to be different than halfway across the other side of the state. Where to find us? We're all over. It's just at Florida Keepers on Instagram, on Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. If you go to, we also have a website, it's under work. So, we're making some updates there, but that's just floridakeepers.com. We own that domain and all the other, closely matched ones just to be safe. And then also on Instagram, if you want to get in our chat, directly talking to our members, directly talking to the team, on our Instagram is a link in the bio for the onboarding chat. That's where you can essentially, you know, it's one click and then you're essentially on your way to becoming a part of the organization. And yeah, we obviously have board, district leaders, we have members. And so we're trying to make sure where we can have teams that essentially can focus on issues in their part of the state, but also have a board that can lead the entire organization and the direction and keep its, not only its progress and its overall work ethic, but also making sure issues are brought to bear.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, Sergey, we're just so grateful to have you today on the podcast. We're grateful for your work, your leadership, your energy, and what you're doing for the state of Florida. I wish we could get more Yankees like you to come down here.
Well, he's good. A Midwesterner. He's not, technically not a Yankee.
There you go. But we'll throw your links on the podcast here. And just so grateful for everything you're doing. Godspeed. And we're with you, brother. We appreciate what you're doing. And hey, send me a Bitcoin wallet and I'll send some sats to you. How about that?
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, folks, and keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.